Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Okay, welcome everybody to the first Secular Jihadist live stream and Ask Us Anything episode of 2019. So I'm Ali Rizvi, and with me is Armin Navabi. As always, Armin, Happy New Year. Happy 2019.
Happy New Year.
Oh, and I already said this last time, but last year, but belated happy birthday. You were born on December 25th.
Oh, thank you.
And also happy anniversary. I saw that somewhere.
And the Valentine's is coming. Basically, this is the part of the year where I go broke.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
You get Christmas, yeah, anniversary, and Valentine's coming.
Oh, do you have a kid?
What?
Do you have a kid? Do you have a kid? You don't have a kid. Then you don't go broke. Okay. That's a totally different story. Okay. So what we thought, this time, like Armin and I were talking, and we thought that there's something really amazing that happened just right at the start of this year, and there was a story in the news. So you know, I'll get to that. I want to talk about it, but I think the story itself is pretty amazing. It's the story of Rahaf Al-Qunun, right? Rahaf Al-Qunun is a young 18-year-old Saudi girl, and her Saudi family was. I think they were on holiday or they were traveling for some reason to Kuwait. So while they were in Kuwait, when she was in Saudi Arabia, she is an ex-Muslim. She left Islam. Apparently nobody in her family knew, but she could not escape Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia has a male guardianship rule, which means that a woman cannot travel outside the country without permission of a male guardian. They can't actually travel anywhere, even in the country, without the permission of a male guardian. Kuwait doesn't have that rule. So she waited until she got to Kuwait. And then from Kuwait, she escaped. She flew to Thailand en route to Australia. And when she was in Thailand, in Bangkok, she was apparently accosted by some authorities. They took away her passport and they detained her. And they had pretty much decided they were going to send her back to her family, which in this case would be a death sentence, because not only was she a girl who escaped her family, and this was a question of honor, but she had also left Islam and she was an apostate. So what happened next over the next 24 hours was just amazing. It's something that, you know, I haven't really seen anything like this in intensity and scale within such a short time. Is that the ex-Muslim community now is so big and has such a voice that they all came together, they rallied for her. She was tweeting. She ended up getting, like, within just a few hours, she had tens of thousands of Twitter followers. Everyone started advocating for her. Journalists picked up the story. Within 24 hours, she was on, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal. There was stuff on BBC. There was coverage on CNN. There was coverage in the Wall Street Journal. So all of these papers and many mainstream journalists got a hold of this story to the extent that Mona Al-Tahawi started rallying for her release. And she actually did a lot to help spread the word. Ilhan Omar, you know, the Somali-American, the new member of Congress and the House of Representatives, she went and she tweeted her case. This is an ex-Muslim girl, an 18-year-old ex-Muslim girl, which was a widely known fact. But everybody rallied for her. And ultimately, because of the international pressure, she has now been declared a refugee. The United Nations Human Rights Commission made their way over there. They talked to her. And now she is on her way to freedom. And this is a really amazing thing because this was done by the world's current ex-Muslim community. That means that there is influence, there's power, and there is a size to this that is just unprecedented. This kind of thing has never happened before. So it's a really, really incredible story. And I think there are two parts to it. I mean, the first part of it is the story of Rahaf herself. You know, Rahaf, what she did. I mean, her bravery and her courage is admirable. I mean, she knew exactly how to use social media. She knew how to gain influence. There was a secret tape that was recorded. I don't know if Armin, you saw that, the video. Well, yeah, you did. You tweeted it.
Yeah, yeah.
The video of the Saudi.
That was so good. That was so good because he was talking about what a big of a PR nightmare it was, but his video became its own PR nightmare.
It became a PR nightmare. So it was a Saudi official in Bangkok, one of the people who was, pretty much instrumental. He wanted to send her back. You know, he did not want to let her be free and let her be declared a refugee. And this guy was recorded saying that he was just amazed. He's like, so within just a few hours, she had 45,000 Twitter followers. He's like, we should have taken away her phone, not her passport. That's what he said. You know, so kudos to Rahaf for bravery and her courage and being able to do this. But also, everyone out there, the second huge part of the story is what has happened with the ex-Muslim community. I mean, we were talking last year, we renamed this podcast the Muslim Enlightenment. We were talking about this huge secular movement that's taking place, how there are conferences and books and podcasts like ours coming out. And now that has, I think it's grown even more. It hasn't just grown, doubled in size. It's by many orders of magnitude, it's grown. And this is evidence of it. I mean, so that's why we called this live stream Ex-Muslims Go Mainstream. I mean, this is within 24 hours to have that kind of mainstream international coverage for Rahaf, an open and declared ex-Muslim, right, from Saudi Arabia, and having even Muslims coming to support her cause. This is a really, really huge thing. So for those people who thought that this was just a fringe phenomenon and they're dismissive about it, well, it's not. You know, it's gotten.
Can we mention the similar story of the girl that didn't make it out? This is like a second version.
Yes.
So let's remember her, because yes, this is basically a repeat of that story. But that was a failure. But this one turned out to be a success. I just want to make sure.
There were several of those, unfortunately. It wasn't just one. But go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You tell better stories.
Yeah, you're talking about the UAE.
No, the one that went to Philippines, that Philippines sent her back.
Yes. Do you know the details of that? I don't remember the details very well.
I think...
But it was a similar story that there was a girl, she was also from Saudi Arabia, right?
Yeah.
And her name, I think, was Dina.
Yeah.
Dina, yeah. So Beej just mentioned it. Yeah, Dina unfortunately didn't make it. She went to the Philippines. This was several months ago. And at that time, there was a lot of rallying. I mean, credit to the many ex-Muslims that came to her.
It was picked up by a lot of ex-Muslim activists online, but it wasn't picked up by mainstream media. The difference between this one, so Philippines, and this really pisses me off, that shows how much influence Saudi. There's two things that changed, okay? And I think this is because of Khashoggi, okay? The first thing is that when people were talking about Dina, a lot of activists talked about it online, but it didn't go into mainstream media. And the second thing is that Saudi Arabia enjoyed a lot more influence back then. And I think maybe these two things are relevant. And I think because of the bad PR, I'm not sure actually, because one country was Philippine, one country is Thailand. So I don't know if we're comparing apples to oranges. But I don't know if this situation would have been more like the Philippine situation if Saudi Arabia was not under such heavy nightmare. But again, this shows how putting pressure on the image of a country as shitty as Saudi Arabia, it helps in so many unpredictable way, like this one. By the way, we just got a $50 super chat. Holy shit. Thank you, Amir.
Amir, thank you very much. And we will get to that in just a second. Your question will absolutely get to that.
Oh, yeah, this is. I saw something about this on Twitter.
Let's finish, Armin, talking about what you were saying.
Sorry. Yeah, I got distracted by the $50 super chat. But
capitalist all
the way. No, but what I'm saying is that I don't, this is, we shouldn't forget her because we still don't know where she is. What the hell happened to her? Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, a lot of people were shaming people. Like, first of all, I posted, I was really happy to see that somebody like Philip DeFranco was covering it. When I saw it on Philip DeFranco, I'm like, okay, this thing has gone mainstream. This thing is all over the place. Like, Philip DeFranco is covering it. And the way Philip DeFranco was covering it, it was like, it wasn't like, oh, this person that was just, you know, it was, they didn't just mention the guardianship issue, that men have control over women, or reform or activism. They, mainstream media was covering the fact that she left, she renounced Islam, and she left Islam, and she's an atheist, right? And to me, it was like, holy shit, what? Look at what she's doing. She has normalized. She has done in a few days, like years worth of our activism. Like just all of these mentioning of, look what could happen to her. She, first of all, the fact that she's left Islam and that's getting a lot of attention. You have a lot of people don't know how foreign of a concept it is to a lot of Muslims, even today, that you could just leave Islam. Right? A lot of people think, well, we have ex-Muslim movement. This is obvious. People know that you could just leave it. No, there are millions of people in a bubble that they don't even know this is an option. When something like this gets covered on mainstream, this opens a whole doors of possibility to people that didn't even know that this that you could even do that. You could be a Muslim and then you could stop being a Muslim. Like, just that attention that that's getting is priceless. But then the attention that it's getting, the fact that, like, look, she, just because she changed to not, that's great for Muslims. For non-Muslims, the amount of attention the consequences of leaving Islam can bring to somebody in Islamic countries, that attention that that's getting is also fucking priceless. That's amazing. Like, I don't know if people understand how much things have changed just because of this. How much more normalized and attention just this whole ex-Muslim movement is getting. Like, the ex-Muslim movement is like a fringe little thing compared to a whole bunch of other movements. And this is a whole new level. This is when big media organizations are talking about people leaving Islam. A lot of sources, when I mention Philly D, I'm talking about sources because there are some sources of news that I go to for very specific information that I get, like about Islamic stuff, religion stuff, ex-Muslim related stuff. And I have sources for more general stuff that I want to be aware of about things in the world that is happening, right? When you see your activism news start leaking into the general sources of your news, then you know that something big is happening. And this is one of those cases.
Yeah, and I do want to mention that there are a couple of things. First of all, there is another girl right now, and I have to, I'll make a little programming announcement as well, that we have, you're going to hear this after this, Mimsy Vids, who's she's a female ex-Muslim woman, really, really smart, makes amazing videos, and she's also the wife of Vidu Vids, or I should say Vidu Vids is her husband, so that she's going to be on the show on Sunday, so we're going to be doing a live stream with her this Sunday.
We should start referring to Vidu Vids as a husband.
As Mr. Mimsy? Yeah, I know. We should start doing that. So that's one thing, and she's actually made a video about another girl, and her name is Basma. So Basma she is a Yemeni girl. She's from Yemen, and she's also an ex-Muslim. Armin,
She's an ex-Muslim, feminist, humanist, all of the good stuff.
And she's currently in Turkey because she has escaped from Yemen because her father had threatened to kill her. So she's also, you know, in fear of her life. I mean, these are really, really tragic stories. So it's we don't want to downplay that. We don't want to forget what they're going through, but at the same time, this galvanization of, you know, what happened in this Rahaf Al-Qanun's case is just fantastic.
Did you see
very encouraging.
So sometimes people don't tweet about these things because they don't know if the stories are true or not, and it's really hard to verify. But if you if you see the way I tweeted it, like, I try to be very strategic about it. I say I have been told that this is happening, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to not tweet about these things, but also I don't want to give out any false information at the same time, right? So I've been said, like, so I don't want to create a situation where people could, like, a lot of us now care. And because a lot of us care, some people want to come take advantage of that. And if one person manages to take advantage of that, that story is now going to be used to dismiss all the real stories, right?
Right.
So
right.
We need to come up with a very good system of dealing with this. And I think a lot of people are trying, and, you know, the people that have a platform, we're going to look at what is working and try to highlight them. Right.
Right. And I want to mention just a couple of more things. There's another bit of good news similar to the Rahaf case. Recently, we had Haris Sultan on. Haris Sultan, a lot of you know him as the ex-Muslim YouTuber. He lives in Australia. He had talked about a young man named Spartacus in Pakistan. He had nicknamed him Spartacus. That was his, because he couldn't reveal his real name. And Spartacus is also now free. So he had started a funding thing to get him out of Pakistan. He was trapped there for 10 years. He had been horribly abused and horribly beaten and persecuted. And he's also an atheist, right? An ex-Muslim living in Pakistan. And now he's safely outside of the country. He's attained refugee status. And at this point, I want to make another announcement and I've talked to him. I know this. There is an ex-Muslim, a Saudi ex-Muslim that is increasingly in a dangerous situation. And, he's obviously anonymous right now. And I will post the description for his GoFundMe if you want to help him get funds to get out and relocate. So this is confirmed. I'm vouching for him. The URL is gofundme.com/help-save-Ahmed. That's Ahmed. So if you guys can go over there, if you're interested in helping and reading about his case, you can read that too.
Before we go into the live chat, I just want to mention, I'm still very interested in to know who took your passport, because she had a legit visa. She didn't need to prove that she's going to stay in Thailand, because she wasn't staying in Thailand. So the fact that they took her passport shows how much Saudi's tentacles are all over the place. And we need to, I think, like, the story shouldn't be dropped until they figure out who actually managed, who is the puppet of Saudi Arabia in Thailand that actually managed to go have such an influence that took the passport away from a person that had all the right paperwork to go to Australia, right? That's mm-hmm. because, you know, I'm really happy that Saudi Arabia, this is becoming a PR nightmare again for Saudi Arabia as well. Because
as it should,
yeah. So I'm hoping that all this PR nightmare is going to keep hurting Saudi Arabia, and I'm hoping that we could keep following up on where Din Ali is, and also we need to shame Philippines at some point. And I know I'm not against. Like, I'm hoping our Filipino fans don't get upset about this. I'm talking about whoever in the government decided to send Din Ali back. I think we need to go back and revisit that case. And make sure the governments enough so that other governments think twice before doing something like this. I mean, it's really hard to get somebody out of there. And then once they get out, if you send them back, that's a tragedy of its own.
Yeah. I do want to talk about a few other things regarding this, but I wanted to, let's do the super chat question first, and then we'll.
One more thing. Mm-hmm. I know there's a Facebook live chat as well, and I'm going to, one person mentioned that some people didn't mention that Rahaf is an atheist. And I noticed that some people do and some people don't. And I'm really glad that a lot of people are mentioning it, even though some people are trying to keep that out because that's a dirty thing to do. And I know some people that are more on the reformist side, they try not to talk about it. They just try to talk about the fact that she was just leaving, the fact that
Saudi Arabia
right. and is misogyny and is male dominated. And they don't touch on the fact that this is a girl that is an atheist. She's an ex-Muslim apostate. She left Islam. And the fact that even some reformists are trying to shy away from that shows how dirty this whole atheism is, even among the minds of some reformist Muslim. And the people
allies.
Allies. And I'm glad that the fact that some, not all of the mainstream media are mentioning it shows that we're moving forward and making it less of a dirty thing, less of a thing that we need to stop talking. Okay, go on, Ellie.
Yeah, and yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I want to mention like a couple other things that happened this year. I mean, even prominent celebrities. Armin, you were talking about how, you know, when it's visible, when you can see, often it's not that people need to sit and convince you and give you arguments. Often you just have to see it's an option. For a lot of people, they don't, as Armin said, they don't even know it's an option. So when they see when Zayn Malik, right, the famous singer, pop singer, came out and he just said in an interview, he said, no, I wouldn't call myself Muslim. So in a way, you know, he's not identifying as a Muslim anymore. You know, that's a huge thing. So people are thinking, oh, I can do that? I didn't know I could do that. Another actress on The Good Place, a really, really famous show. It's a very popular show. Jameela Jamil, who's on there, who's both of Indian and Pakistani, of Muslim heritage. And she was attacked for being a bad Muslim on Twitter. And she responded, she actually said that I'm not Muslim. You know? She's allowed to read out her tweet. So this was really a fascinating thing.
What did she say?
She said, she actually said, I have no religion and I'm on a fine path.
Oh, right? Wait. That's awesome. Who is this again?
This is Jameela Jamil from The Good Place, the show. Okay. She said, I'm not a Muslim. I wasn't raised as Muslim. My mother was a model. My father ate pork and drank alcohol. My uncle was a Catholic priest. I was raised in the West. So she came. Her parents came from Muslim backgrounds, but that her mother, whose name is Shireen Jamil, I mean, she's also said the same thing, that she had a tweet. She also put out a tweet saying, talking about how in Islam, you know, or with the women are treated badly and so on. So there's this sort of, you know, you had the movie, we talked about this last year, you know, the movie The Big Sick with Kumail Nanjiani, where he says, I don't know if I believe in Allah or not. So a lot of this dialogue is becoming mainstream.
I forget her name. There was this really good comedian on the show. She mentioned that she might support Trump, not because he likes him, but because her dad is a Muslim. And she just wants a Muslim ban so that that can't come back. But then, like, and this was on mainstream TV, right? But that was kind of funny. But wait, this lady that you just mentioned, her father is a Muslim or not? Do you know?
No. She comes from a Muslim background where her parents are apparently very secular.
But is her father Muslim, though?
Her father, yeah, both of her parents are from apparently.
I'm not talking about Muslim background. That doesn't mean much. Are they actual?
No. Her parents are, her mother, it seems from her tweets, I'm just assuming this.
No,
she seems
the mother doesn't matter. Okay. So that's Judaism. Okay. What I'm trying to get at is for many Muslims, if your father is a Muslim, you're a Muslim. And if you say you're not a Muslim, if your father was a Muslim, you have abandoned the faith that you were born with. Right. So her mother doesn't count. That's Judaism, where you get your religion from your mother. For in Islam, you get your religion from your father. So I'm wondering if she's considered an apostate or not based on whether or not her father is a Muslim. That's what I was
wondering. That I don't know, actually. Right. But her mother, okay, so I'll read out what her mother said. Her mother said, quote, no, I don't think I got, okay, she said, my daughter's mom, she was responding to somebody who said that her daughter, her mom was a bad Muslim. So she said, I'm a Muslim born Pathan who prayed 5 times a day, finished the Quran in Arabic aged 8, and moved away from religion in my teens after men twisted Islam to control women. That's what she said. Kindness is my children's religion. And then Team Jamil are my daughter's father and her family. They're Indian and a family I married into, not my blood. I'm a Pathan. Pathan is a Pashtun, Western Pakistan from there. My father was Pathan Sayyid, directly descended from the Prophet. I no longer practice Islam. Truth is the altar at which I worship.
Wow.
So these are really strong public statements coming out from very, very prominent people.
If I may, I know this is kind of a cheesy thing to do, but I wanna also use this opportunity to shout out the reform movement because we are getting a lot of examples of leaving Islam, shitting on Islam, becoming more mainstream, And like I said, this movement has legs and it's going to go places. So to all the people that are like, oh, you can't expect that from people. That's too much. No, it's not too much. It's happening and it's now going mainstream. So
yeah. So and to Muslims who feel bad about this at all, or if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, okay, so many people, just remember you've got Sinead O'Connor. She crossed over.
No, to the Muslims that feel bad about this, I say, like, we have to feel bad. Books that you're endorsing that tells us that we need to die or be tortured for eternity or a lot of other shit. So
yeah, no, you're giving the serious answer. I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying, if you're upset about this, like, we don't give a shit that you're upset about this.
Okay. So let's go. So let's go to the live chat now. First question comes from Amr Naqvi. Thank you, Amr. No. And he's saying, when is your debate with the Mufti and who will be involved? So this is another short story, and I'll make it short. I will get the name of the... His name is what? Musa Tariq, I think? Okay, anyway, let me tell you the story. So basically, Haris Sultan, like our friend Haris Sultan, who's been on the podcast in a very, very fun episode. And by the way, I did my first Urdu podcast with him just a few days ago. That's on YouTube as well. So he posted this thing where a Pakistani mufti or imam or religious scholar, whatever you'd call it, they have several names for the same thing. His name is Mufti Muhammad Tariq or Mufti Tariq Masood. He has invited Pakistani ex-Muslims to come and speak to him. And the picture on the YouTube video he did has Haris Sultan, Abdullah Gandal, and me. And Abdullah Gandal, many of you know, he's, you know, so far the only repeat guest we've ever had on here on Secular Jihadists. Amazing guest. So all three of us are actually very excited about it. We're willing to take him up on it. I hope it's not a dud, because usually what happens is that these people will invite you, they'll challenge you. They'll challenge you publicly, and then you go on, you message them, and they disappear.
Yeah.
So, or maybe they don't think we're going to take it up. I don't know what it is. But I posted my email. I told him to set something up. Haris has been in touch with him. So I don't know what the update is. And as soon as I know the update, I don't know if Haris or Abdullah or anybody is on the live chat, but if you guys are, then let me know if you have any update on whether he got back to us or not. Anyway, so that's a story with that, but I think it is going to happen. I pretty strongly think it is, and when it does, you'll be the first to know.
Ali, would you be interested in having like a version of Secular Jihadist, like in Urdu, that you speak just in Urdu, and then we have like an Urdu channel or something?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking into that. I would actually like doing that.
Yeah. Because I don't know, an Atheist Republic, we now have.
Yeah, like I know, Iranian.
Yeah, we do it. We have now Jumhuriya Bi Khodayan, which is now the Persian branch of Atheist Republic. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, like, we could do an Urdu thing as well.
Yeah, I think we should. It would be a big thing. I mean, Haris told me when I did the podcast with him, it was received very, very well, first of all. And the second thing is that even though my Urdu's, I haven't practiced it a whole lot. So I was a little sort of stuttery
when
I was
speaking.
Yeah, at the beginning. And then later on, I got better and better as the thing went on. But
there's a whole bunch of new words, apparently. Like in the past, I've left Iran like for more than a decade, and now I keep hearing like new technical words. Like, where did the hell these come? Like, were these always there?
Yeah, no. So this is so what happened is that I think that he said that for his Urdu YouTube thing, the people watch it for longer. You know the stat that says viewer retention or whatever it is?
Yeah.
They watch it for a longer average time than the English. So he gets a very, very good response with his Urdu podcast. So I think that's something. That is the next step. And we talked about this. We did engage with some Muslims last year. I think there's a very interesting phenomenon happening right now of two Muslim women who have been elected into the U.S. House of Representatives. And of course, I've seen all of the sort of lamenting of it, Sharia is coming to the U.S. and everything. But I actually think it's a very good thing. I think that it's very important for a lot of Muslims who have been speaking and who have been sort of representing the Muslim community, when they are put in public position.
Did you explain to people what exactly is happening? Like, people don't even know what a mufti is. So, like, do you want to...
Oh, for that debate? Yeah, the mufti is...
So a mufti really put up a challenge online for some ex-Muslims that are Urdu speaking, and you are one of the people in the pictures. But what is a mufti? Like, you didn't even explain.
Mufti is just sort of, I think mufti, maulana, mullah, imam nowadays are pretty much interchangeable. The only difference, I think, with an imam is just somebody technically who leads prayer. But then imams, the big imams, are also the ones that are... revered by the Shia Muslims. So these words are, they're used in so many different contexts.
Yeah, they're different, but we could get over. Islamic scholar, quote unquote, expert.
And you know,
whenever they say Islamic scholar, I want to like add, like, it's kind of like being a scholar in witchcraft, and was like, it doesn't mean like it's not. Because I think it's such an insult to the word scholar to call these people scholars.
Yeah, I think that it's just a matter of that they're self-appointed.
Yeah.
Most of them, and it's different for different sects as well.
Yeah.
So, but functionally, they're pretty much used interchangeably. What I was I talking about before? Before this debate thing.
Urdu.
Yeah, the whole Urdu, that, I think that's important. But I think I was talking about something else, but we'll get back to it.
All right. Next, people in the live chat, and by the way, I also have Facebook live chat open, and guess who? We had Weedoo Wids in the Facebook live chat. But I'm going to keep an eye on the Facebook live chat in case somebody asks a question. But you keep an eye on the...
Oh, I remember what I was talking about. I wanted to talk about this because this is important. This idea of the Muslim women who have been elected to Congress, or Sadiq Khan being elected mayor. I think this is really, really important because we're talking about Muslim integration. And when we have somebody like Rashida Tlaib or like Ilhan Omar or like Sadiq Khan, who were revered figures in their communities, in Muslim communities, and they're representing the Muslim community, it's very important that for them to get into public positions of power where they're not just representing the Muslim community. Now, both of those congresswomen have to represent Americans. They have to represent their constituency. That means they have to go out and go beyond just Muslim communities, and they have to. And you've seen this even with people like Linda Sarsour. You know, initially she was always like Israel this, Jews that. And then when she became mainstream and Bernie put his arms around her, she had to start walking. She was pressured to start walking that back. And that's a very, very...
It's too late. It's going to come
for haunt. For her, it's going
to come haunt her forever. Anyway, let's go to
It is. Yeah. So I think that, this whole idea, I don't think we should lament this. I think we should encourage it if there are people. One way to really introduce secularism, a value for the separation of religion and state with Muslims, is to encourage them to get into positions of political power, like political positions, so that they know what it's like to represent people that are not just Muslims, to represent non-Muslims and other people in their constituency.
Asif is in the Facebook live chat. He's saying Mufti is a religious authority that can make Islamic legal rulings. So that's different. Mm. So it's not just a religious...
Oh, so that's why this guy was giving fatwas too.
Yeah,
so
yeah. You have to give... By the way, this is mostly for Sunni Islam. I mean, when I was in Iran, I never heard Mufti in my life. I only heard imams.
I think it's a South Asian thing.
Okay.
All right, so... at least it's more prominent there, but I don't know for sure. I should
say. All right,
Theo Maki is saying, "Hey, Armin, got to watch a new video on Ideas Unboxed. Did you get my message on what you should cover next?"
But guys, I have. I tried to get to all my messages. Sorry if it's just a little bit of a delay. I get like 200 messages on, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Gmail every day, and I'll try my best to get back to it. But yes, Theo, I saw that you sent me a message. I'll respond to it as soon as I can. Sorry if there's a delay sometimes.
And I want to plug Ideas Unboxed here because these are like full scale documentaries that Armin's doing. They're amazing. They're visually stunning. He's going to places. I think this in the anti-Semitism unbox, he went to I think, was it like a Holocaust museum or Jewish Heritage Museum?
Right. Yes, but they're also very expensive. So I'm waiting to get more patrons. I know some people don't like Patreon anymore, but there's no alternative. So please don't leave us on Patreon. We really do need your help there. But
check out Islam Unboxed with Daniel Hakikaju. This is the Harvard physics guy who says that apostasy should be punishable by death in an ideal Islamic society, and Imam Tawhidi. So that was a very entertaining
YouTube channel with only 1,000 subscribers, it got 30,000 views, which is pretty good for a start, right? On the YouTube channel.
That's a start.
But yeah, so, I'm hoping to get more support on this, because when we do an atheist republic or psychologist, it takes a lot of time and energy to do this thing, but it doesn't take paying a lot of other camera equipment or staff or like a crew to do all the stuff that we're doing, and also travel expenses. So for that, I'm trying to see if I could get into a place where more people will support it before we do what until we could do more projects. But yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah.
So I have. Sorry. Should I go on?
No. Go on.
I have another question, and this is actually a good question because I just read about this today, and this is from Twitter. It's AK saying Ali. It was for me. It's Ali. I'd be interested to know what your position is on the Tarrant County, Texas decision to oust Dr. Shafi simply because he's Muslim. So far, you and Faisal and your friends at the intellectual dark web have been unusually silent. Yeah, the intellectual dark web, I don't know.
What is it that you've been silent about?
He's just saying that we've been silent about it, apparently.
About
he's
not what? Really a huge fan.
So here's a story, and I'm obviously not silent about it because I'm talking about it right now. There's a Texas county called Tarrant County. I think it's called Tarrant. And there is a doctor there. Right. He's a neurosurgeon. His name is Shahid Shafi, right? He's from Pakistani origin. I actually have some mutual friends with him. I have friends who are friends with this guy. And he is a practicing Muslim. And the state or the local, the Tarrant County, the county municipal Republican Party is having a vote to see if they should keep him or fire him. Why do they want to fire him? Because he's Muslim. There's no catch in this. They have said, that's it. So Dory O'Brien is one of the members of the executive committee in the Tarrant County Republican Party. She said, we don't think he's suitable as a practicing Muslim to be vice chair because he'd be the representative for all Republicans in Tarrant County, and not all Republicans in Tarrant County think Islam is safe or acceptable in the U.S. Now he is a Republican, Shahid Shafi. So, I guess that's what happens when Muslims want to be Republicans. That's what I'm going to say. But I think it's absolutely ridiculous. This is insanity. This is the religious litmus test that is completely unconstitutional. It's stupid. We've made a repeatedly.
Wait, did they say, is that the exact line that they use? Because that is, all the Republicans.
I read it out. Oh, sorry. He's not a neurosurgeon. He's a trauma surgeon. Yeah, that's exactly what she said.
So we have atheist Republicans. And so that would mean that not all Republicans agree with Christianity. So you should get rid of all your Christian.
It's absolutely moronic. So AK, if you are listening to this, I just spoke earlier about how I think it's a good thing and how I do support the election of Rashida Tlaib and of Ilhan Omar to the U.S. Congress. As well as Sadiq Khan as a London mayor. And, you know, I do support these people, and I support them because of this reason. I think that this is a foundational catalyst for integration. On one hand, if you're saying you want Muslims to integrate, you want to put them in positions of power where they have to interact.
No, I disagree actually with you, Ali, a little bit on this. I don't think we should have diversity for the sake of diversity.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. Oh.
I don't think that we should put somebody in a position because they're Muslim, just as much as we shouldn't put in a position, just in the same way that we shouldn't put, we shouldn't withhold somebody from a position because they're Muslim. I think it should be irrelevant.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that they should be elected on their merit, right? But we shouldn't hold back just because they're Muslim.
Right.
That should obviously not be the case for anybody of any religion.
But you're against.
You shouldn't hold back.
But you should. You're against like saying like, "Hey, this person is this color or this or that gender."
Oh, of course. No.
So let's put them there just because there's not that enough of this gender or this race over there.
Yeah. No, not at all. For that. But okay, I'm saying if there's a legitimate candidate who has a lot of support based on their merits and their policies, and even if some people voting for them because they're like, okay, they're, whatever it is, if they have support and they get into Congress, then we should support them. We should support people like that because that's the one way to get people to think about people outside of their own communities, right? It's especially for Muslims, many sort of prominent Muslim figures they represent their community and they represent their
community. But you just contradicted yourself, I think. I don't know.
You may not be understanding me properly.
Okay. A lot of people might say, why wouldn't you be against somebody in a position if they're Muslim? Aren't you guys against Islam? Don't you think this is like a stupid thing to believe in? So why wouldn't you think somebody?
What you're saying.
I'm not saying this, by the way. I'm just saying, I'm trying to play devil's.
This is different from what
I just said earlier.
It's a very good point and it's a good question. So here's what it is. I'll qualify that by saying that yes, in a secular society, okay, in a society where religion and state are separate and they can't use clearly anybody who's elected into the U.S. House of Representatives or the U.S. Senate knows that the First Amendment separates religion and state, right? So whether you're Christian, whether you're Muslim, whoever you are, when you go in, when you're coming down to drafting legislation, right? Then you're not. You cannot use your faith. You have to look at your constituency, what your people want, and based on that, you have to do it. And this actually, when people get into these positions, they have to represent all of their constituents, and all of their constituents are not going to be 100% Muslim.
No, so, but why wouldn't you think that somebody that believes in some such stupid shit shouldn't even, why wouldn't you trust them less than somebody that doesn't believe in stupid shit? Like, for example, here's this, let's forget religion, mm-hmm. right? If somebody comes and tells you that they believe in conspiracy, there was no moon landing, it was just all staged, okay? Mm-hmm. And also reptiles rule the world. Right? The reptilian people, okay? Now you want to hire them for a very important work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not think that, okay, this guy believes in some... and that their work is not really relevant to whether their reptiles are ruling the world or not. Or and their work has nothing to do... is not very relevant at all to the fact that moon landing was real. But would you second, you know, would you be like, this guy seems a bit off. Maybe I shouldn't hire him.
So two answers for that. And I think that you will disagree with at least one of them.
Okay.
Okay. The first one is if they are being elected to a place where constitutionally they cannot use their beliefs and they have to justify all of their actions and their legislative proposals with the backing of the law, right? Or they have to go according to the Constitution, make sure it's commensurate with it, and they can't bring any of their beliefs into it, then I think it would encourage them to be in an environment where people would shit on that, and they would. They'd call them out. That's one thing. And the second thing is that I think that even though the beliefs itself, I think it's the same. You believe reptiles rule the world. You think God rules the world. I don't see a difference. I mean, they're both delusional and fantastical beliefs. But at the same time, the people who usually, if someone believes the reptiles rule the world, they usually have come to that belief on their own. Now,
No, it's not true.
If you get
mixed with the wrong crowd, you can believe in something.
I know, but that's what I'm trying to tell you. I mean, usually if you have millions and millions of people in the world who believe reptiles rule the world, and you're born into a family where all of your relatives and your parents taught you right from when you were a little kid that reptiles rule the world, and you grew up thinking that, right, then I wouldn't hold it as against you as I might if you are somebody who just came to the realization that, hey, reptiles rule the world. And that argument because of the argument's merit.
I can't think of an example of somebody that independently came to that realization. Most of them were in a community of people that... who convinced them of that. Just the same as religion.
You got to deal with it. I mean, there's only... you know, on the positive side, there's one senator now that's openly non-theist, and it's really interesting. She replaced Jeff Flake from Arizona when she came out. She's openly non-theist. Otherwise, pretty much everyone in Congress, except for, I think, just a couple of congressmen and this one senator, Kyrsten Sinema, every single one of them believes in something or another, right? So there's, I think that that's where we'll leave this discussion.
Let me respond to my own devil's advocate. My father believed in, I'm not sure if he still believes it or not, that believed that 9/11 was an inside job, right? And he is a very good doctor. He's a very good heart surgeon, and he's also a very academic. Like, he is a full prof, and he teaches stuff in university. But he still believed that 9/11 was an inside job. So that doesn't mean that he's not a good doctor. That doesn't mean that he doesn't know the science that he teaches in university, because people could be very smart about something and very dumb about something else. They can compartmentalize these things.
They can.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's for that reason. Like, and again, this example had no religion in it, right? No, there's nothing about religion in this example. And if we could say that it's true about dumb and smart, non-religious ideas, we should be able to say that about religious ideas as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are Muslim and Christian, and as atheists, we think it's really dumb for you to believe in that stuff, right?
Yeah.
But you could at the same time be very good at your job and be very smart about other things.
Yeah, but Armin, the one thing, and I, that's even better articulated than what I was trying to say. So I think that's a great point. But one thing is, like, for example, if your dad believes that, that's a very common view in Iran. It's a very common view in Pakistan. But if he was put in a situation, like, for instance, where, you know, he was part of a big, physicians group, and he had to interact with them, and he had to represent a larger physician community, and most of the other physicians did not believe that 9/11 was an inside job, he would be forced to be able to have to interact.
Well, that's why I say I don't know anymore if he believes it or not, because he's more skeptical about it now, but I don't know if that's because he's actually skeptical about it or because he doesn't want us to not like him saying that. So he hasn't been pressured by colleagues. Maybe he's been more being pressured by his own sons.
That's what matters. What matters is that you interact with people, and you're in a position where you have to interact with people that don't just think like you.
Right.
Or even, but they think differently, and you have to exchange ideas, and you have to see the merits of their points of view. And even more so, even beyond that, if you have to represent, right, a constituency where the views are very, very diverse, right? Now, we're not just talking about people looking different. We're talking about people's ideas and beliefs and views are very diverse. And you have to, your job is to represent them and to listen to them and to consider what they think and take it seriously. That puts a kind of pressure on you, right? That forces you to integrate into a larger community that goes beyond your own group.
But is that
group.
Really a good thing? We want to actually convince people, not to force them into a position.
No. We're not. They're nobody put a gun to their head to run the election.
No, they know exactly.
Yeah. They're adults. They know that they have to get votes to win.
Yeah, but
to get
if
votes after.
That's too being two-faced, though, no? I don't know. Well, okay,
I don't know. I think you might be overthinking it.
Okay.
But anyway, let's go on. So, we had that question. Then we have a lot of conversation here about incels.
Who had a very good video on incels? Vitoviz had an incel on his show, and he had interviewed him. Go check that out. That's pretty good.
Vidovitz has a great show. So there's that Theomachus question about the difference between the Imam and Mufti and everything.
Right.
So there's some. Abdullah Samir is here. Hey, Abdullah. And then asking him questions. And he's answering some questions here, too.
Oh, he's doing a job. Thank you, Abdullah.
That's great. Okay, so the Buddhaman is asking, what happens if the apostate is a male? Would he be killed by his family, too?
He would be killed by the state.
He would be killed by the state. They would all, but you know what? That is a good question, because If I have to be honest,
which country are we talking? Only Saudi Arabia?
I think we talk about Saudi Arabia or even in a lot of other places where people would kill people because of apostasy. I do think that the thing for women, for females, is a lot worse because it's not just about leaving Islam. It's about bringing dishonor to the family. It's about becoming loose character. You're not restricted anymore by the morality of them. I mean, these religions are about controlling not only human beings overall, but especially about men controlling women, men having authority over women. It's right in the Quran, Surah 4, verse 34, men are in charge of women. So when that happens, again, if men are given that authority, then especially in societies where you have rules like male guardianship, where a woman can't go anywhere without the man, a woman who apostatizes and leaves a religion, is her job is several orders of magnitude much higher than the man's. And I think the consequences and the risks that she's taking are also several orders of magnitude higher. We had earlier, a few months ago, we had Salwa. If you looked at it, we had a Saudi woman who had also escaped Saudi Arabia in a similar kind of way. She'd stolen her father's mobile. Remember, Armin?
And yes. She told us a story. Oh my God, that was so genius. Why doesn't that story should get more attention? Like one of the full-on successful events like that, why does that get attention?
That was a huge... So that wasn't a prominent thing. She actually kind of did it on her own. I mean, she didn't... She fortunately didn't...
What episode was this, you know? Go check it out.
Yeah, it was called the Saudi Escape from Saudi Arabia.
She planned it perfectly. Like the whole thing was genius. Yeah, and she got out. She so basically that's an example of a story that went perfectly well, and she learned from. Was it her that learned from Dina Ali's story?
Dina. She learned from Dina.
Because she made sure that she gets a flight that doesn't have any stops anywhere. So that she got a direct flight so that she doesn't get sent back by a different country back to Saudi Arabia. So she
actually said this. She gave this as advice. So anybody else out there who's listening to this, remember, if you are traveling outside, we've had cases like, you know, Dina got stopped in the Philippines, with Rafa, it was very, very close. You know, in Thailand, she was on the verge of being sent back, but she wasn't sent back, luckily. But, you know, even with her, if she'd gotten a direct flight, I mean, you just make sure you get a direct flight.
Cut out the part of the video where she's giving advice to other girls that are trying to run out. By the way, sometimes when I say girls, people say, like, oh, is there these people?
They're Armin, women. Just, oh, what? Come on. Come on, just, yeah, whatever.
People get sensitive about these things. But anyways, she had some advice for people. Can you maybe, like, go and cut that part out, like, as a small little clip, and post it on Twitter for the advice part? And then maybe link to the full episode as well, so people can go.
That's exactly what we'll do.
Okay, good.
Okay, so...
But can I answer that question as well? I think the difference between... And again, this is huge generalization, so... But I feel like the difference between the attitude between men and women when men do stuff and women do stuff is men are treated like somebody with full agency of what they do, and then they respond like, and it's the government's role to punish them. They are responsible for their actions and stuff. But if the government doesn't care, then nobody else should really care. But when it comes to women doing something or running away, it's more like they treat her like a kind of like a misbehaving pet that you own, and it's just they just caught it for you, and they're just bringing it back to the owner, and then you either could like do whatever, you could punish it or put it down or whatever, right? So it's kind of like one is like a, you know, treated like an individual but also punished like an individual, but the other one is more like a kind of like a property or something that has just that being returned to the owner or something like that. Yeah, but right. but there are some crimes that even if your property commits, then the government needs to think like they have now ownership over your property, because you can't be like, I don't want her to punish her. Like, no, she left Islam. It's not your choice anymore. So yeah. That's the difference. Okay, go on.
Okay, so Uday is saying, does anyone know if women are now allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia? Yes, in June 2018.
If they don't burn your car down, apparently.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems. I mean, it's like, I guess, what do you call it, growing pains? Yeah. Unfortunately, it's like very long overdue.
A lot of people are not happy. See, this is what I was saying. We had an episode when I said a lot of people in Saudi Arabia, a lot of people are still very the fundamentalist parts of Saudi Arabia is huge. It's not just the government. People were like, no, Armin, what are you talking about? Most young people in Saudi Arabia want modernization, want everything to change. And these women started driving, and their cars, people are just showing up and burning down their cars because they're against the government letting women drive. Go on.
Yeah, so yeah, some numbers, over 40,000 licenses I'm seeing from ArabianBusiness.com. Over 40,000 licenses have been issued to Saudi women drivers, so a lot of them are driving. But to Armin's point, another interesting headline from just the last, just a little while ago. Saudi women are expressing outrage at being allowed to drive. So there are a lot of.
Why are you giving me rights? Why?
So there are actually many Saudi women.
How dare you give me more rights?
Who are opposing this? Of course, many Saudi men are opposing this, and you know, this is a natural thing. Usually, when you have a drastic change like this after a very long time, you know, you have these situations where most people are not comfortable with change. It's kind of thrust upon them, and they rebel against it, and then eventually dies down, and everybody grows a brain and becomes okay. So.
You know, there's a meme of the picture. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but that was woman in hijab saying, "You can't take my rights away if I don't have any rights." Right? Like, I don't know. But no, it's so bizarre because this is exactly what happened in when women were getting the right to vote in Western countries. A lot of women were against it. A lot of women were saying, like, this is not good for women. Women shouldn't be able to vote. Which, again, shows you that fighting for women rights, you don't have to be a woman to fight for women rights. And being a woman doesn't mean that you stand for women rights.
Yeah, this is, I mean, at any type of transformative movement will often present itself in absolutes. And then there will be some level of overcorrection. And then it goes into a second stage where it goes into equilibrium. I mean, the one example of this is like the Me Too movement. It came down, it came out, it was very justified. There were things that all these men in power had been doing for decades and getting away with completely. And they came out and there was this idea of believing all women. And then that overcorrected and it became such a huge thing that then there were many sort of accusations that started coming out for political purposes. And now it's gone down to, like, you know, take all women seriously. Not necessarily like believe all women. So there's been a
Potential victims seriously.
Yeah. So the idea is that there is there often is an overcorrection, but it reaches some kind of equilibrium usually a good thing.
But I don't want people to just be okay with the overcorrection because they're like, hey, overcorrection is just going to happen and we're going to get back to equilibrium. No, the overcorrection is so harmful for the actual original
victims. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the overcorrection is going to have its own overcorrection and it's going to make us go, back. So there's like overcorrection to the overcorrection usually, right? So you have like social justice warriors all of a sudden be like, people are like, okay, you guys are going overboard. You're policing everybody. You're not letting everybody say anything. Even when people apologize, you still don't forgive them. But this has been a correct overcorrection to actual racism and bigotry, which we had a problem with. But now I think what's going to happen is that we're going to have an overcorrection to this overcorrection where a whole bunch of people are going to go back, like, you know, again. So
it's called a meta correction.
Meta correction.
Anyway, yeah. But you know, just to give an example, what my point is that just because some things become overcorrected, we speak out about it all the time. I mean, Armin and I, we've talked about the regressive left. We've talked about like the overcorrection of a lot of these issues. But what happens is that it doesn't delegitimize the the original cause. Like, for instance, lots of Syrians need to get out of Syria. There's a Syrian refugee crisis. The majority of them are escaping war. Are there some terrorists that are going to filter through? Yes, they will. And that's a problem. That doesn't delegitimize the plight of the Syrian refugees. There are many ex-Muslims, right? For instance, who are trying to get asylum or trying to escape their countries where they're being persecuted. Now, are there some of them who are going to fake it to try and get out? Unfortunately, yes, some people do. And, you know, when we talked to Robin Blumner, when we were talking about secular rescue and all that, you're saying that they do have to vet and make sure these are genuine asylum cases. Unfortunately, you have to do that. But it's not the majority of cases, but that just comes with it. That doesn't delegitimize the issue that many ex-Muslims are being persecuted in their countries and have to leave. So
Chris is in the live chat. I'm going to make her a mod. She's a really good mod. Okay.
Okay. Let's do it. Moose Gal is saying, Moose Gal, I think, correct me if I'm wrong. You're in Saudi Arabia, right? But anyway, let us know. Is saying, secular jihadists, what's next for the ex-Muslim movement? Well, I like where we are. Armin, where would you like to see it go?
Wait, what's the question? I was looking at Lefya.
What is next for the ex-Muslim movement?
What, going global. Like, right, I think what we have done is we built communities so far, a lot of good organizations. So we did two things very well. A lot of organizations that came before us have done a lot, like ex-Muslims of North America and the Council of Ex-Muslims of Great Britain and a whole bunch of other stuff, Australia, Norway. And what they've done is that, like, they built community. So far, what we've done is, like, they built community saying, like, hey, you're not alone. There's more of us here. Come meet us. We can help. We can protect you. We can provide community. And then the second phase, I think, was, hey, let's build some content. Let's create some, you know, podcasts and YouTube channels. And we have V2V is an apostate prophet. And we had the masked Arab and a whole bunch of other people that I'm forgetting. And I'm sorry, please don't hate me for forgetting. There's a lot of other good content and they have secular. Well, there's a lot of- Hold on. I'm finishing.
Yeah.
But then, so we've done content, but the thing is these content are also, are in English, right? Some of them, are also in German, like a thing a posted prophet wants to do. It's mostly Western country languages, right? So I think the next phase that we should get into is a replication of both of these two waves for the ex-Muslims that need it the most, which are not the ex-Muslims in Canada, United States, UK, Germany, Sweden, Norway. They are the ex-Muslims in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Malaysia, Egypt, Iran, and everywhere else. So one of these is easy. One of them is hard, more difficult. I mean, both of them are very difficult, but one of them is. So we want to now go on to producing content that they can consume. Separate for them, like in their languages, right? And also to translate what they have to say to English so that we give them a global audience. And we need to find a way, hopefully, if we get enough resources to find an effective way to do that repetitively, right? Like not just one or two videos, like constantly have shows on a weekly basis on that for them and from them. For them, from us to them in their language, and from them to us when we translate what they have to say to the rest of the world. And then the final phase, I think, which is an impossible almost phase, is to build communities for them where they are, which is such a high security risk, which I don't even know, because it's already, like, if you look at what ex-Muslims of North America go through to go through a screening process to create a safe environment for people, ex-Muslims in North America, for them to be able to meet each other, and how fucking big of a nightmare that is. I can't imagine if we will ever be able to do something safe for them in Iran, Saudi Arabia, or Pakistan, but that would be the ultimate goal, which sounds like a very impossible goal, but it's the ultimate goal.
Yeah,
Anyways.
And the one thing I'd like to add to that is I would like to see more, and I've talked about this here before, the more of the Exmoism thing sort of finding its way into the arts, like more TV series, stand-up comedy, music. So if any of you out there are musicians or you want to try your hand at stand-up comedy, go out to an open mic. You know, start becoming public, start, you know, showing yourselves. And I think that, you know, that when we were talking earlier about some of the celebrities and the famous figures who have come out and they've declared that they're not Muslim anymore, like Zayn Malik and like Jamila Jamil and, you know, all these people, it's, that visibility really, really helps. And it has a huge impact. It normalizes Singh. I mean, even without a single argument. So I think that's also one thing that we're seeing more of. And I anticipate that we're going to see a lot more of it, you know, even beyond that in this coming year. So I think it's going to be a great year. Amir Naqvi is asking, how far are you guys on starting the translations for secular jihadists?
We haven't started. We're waiting to get, because I've done some translation work. I hired some people before when it comes to Atheist Republic, and it's not cheap. And we are right now waiting to get to 500 patrons to be able to start that project. So we haven't even started. But as soon as we get enough funding to be able to do that, we'll start. We already know which episodes we want to start translating first, right, Ellie? Mm-hmm. I think it was the one with Abdullah Samir.
Abdullah Gondal.
Abdullah Gondal. Sorry, I'd get the two Abdullahs.
The right. One of them was on the Quran, and the other one was on Muhammad's life.
And yeah, so those are the two episodes we're going to go with, and we're going to basically start spending money on translating that to those to Arabic, Persian, Urdu, Bengali, Malay, Indonesian. And I don't know the differences between Indonesian and Malaysian.
Well, they're very similar.
They're very similar. But those, because a lot of people ignore Indonesia and Malaysia. Yeah, because they're in the Far East and all most of Muslim stuff is happening in the Middle East. But the largest Islamic country in the freaking world is Indonesia, and they don't even get any attention. So I think we need to start bringing the ex-Muslim activism to that country as well. I know there must be a lot of things already happening there. I mean, Ali's book was translated to Indonesian. So
my book is available in Indonesian.
Right.
I have always hesitated to announce this because I don't know what my publisher is going to say, but now I don't give a shit. It's been a long time. So There you go. If it's in Indonesian, look it up.
No, that means there's a demand for this stuff, right? So The fact that people felt like there was a need for it, right? But we need to get in touch with the activists that are active over there, and we'll see how we can highlight what they're doing. So a lot of times we shouldn't assume that there's nothing there. A lot of times people want to go somewhere and they just think like they're bringing something new. But no, you have to first figure out who are the people that are already there and they're doing a lot of work. And while you bring them a lot of content, also highlight the work that is already being done over there. But go on, Ellie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm going to move on. Daniel is saying, so guys, I want to move in so that we can get the different questioners and different people's questions as well. And then we're going to go, if we have time, and see some of you who are repeating questions. Asking questions, more than one question. We'll get to that. Okay, so Daniel was saying, who do you think is the cutest One Direction singer? I think it's Zayn Malik. I think I'm clarity. I don't know.
Because
I don't know if it's because... Huh?
Because he left Islam?
Well, not just because he left Islam. He's just a really, really good-looking guy. And I think most... I think he's generally considered to be the cutest. Who are the other ones? Other one I know is Harry Styles.
I just know him. Because of the whole Islam thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my wife is mad at me because I am none of the people in One Direction. So that's because of who I am.
All right,
anyway, so Moose, should the world force the Middle East to have an enlightenment, or should they do that in their own time?
It was the forcing method was already tried. No, not neither of those two is correct. Okay,
neither
of them.
Yeah, I was just gonna say
the forcing option has already been tried in Iran and in Turkey, and look at what's happening there now. Forcing enlightenment values on people is kind of like the overcorrection that we just talked about.
It's against enlightenment values.
That's a good point, Ali. But when you try, it's kind of like what it's really is. It's not actually enlightenment values, you're right, Ali, because it's against the values, but it's an attempt to make it look like you already got there without actually taking the steps. It's kind of like putting lipsticks on a pig. Well, you know, when the leaders like Ataturk or Reza Shah, they're just so desperate to look like what the West that they just make everybody act like they already got there, even though people don't really believe in any of the values that got the other countries over there, right? So that's an overcorrection that is going to have a nightmarish reaction to it, which is going to get you an Islamic Republic. I mean, I tell people, like, Iran went from a country that within one generation, Iran went from the only country in the whole world that hijab was illegal. Hijab used to be illegal in public in Iran. Okay, and it was the only country in the world where hijab was illegal, went from that country to now being the only country in the world where hijab is mandatory for everyone, including non-Muslims and including foreigners. And that's how extreme it is, from being one extreme to another extreme.
Yeah.
So, but the other option, let them get there by themselves. Those are not the two other options, the only two options. You could introduce people to enlightenment values, you could try selling enlightenment values, you could start promoting enlightenment values. That's neither forcing or abandoning people.
Yeah, I like there's this term that I like to use. I guess I don't have a better alternative for it, but you know how they say diplomatic pressure? I like saying conversational pressure. Like, in the sense that, you know, you're not forcing, you're not sitting back and doing nothing, but at the same time, you're reaching out to people. You're exposing them to ideas that, you know, they may not have been exposed to. You're hearing them out as well. And you're having conversations, you're engaging them. And, you know, when we've said this quote so many times here, when Maryam Namazi, when she said that the internet is doing for the Islamic world today what the printing press did for Christianity in the past, she's absolutely right. The internet has, I don't think people understand when I was living in Saudi Arabia in the 80s, it was like, in terms of the news, the only way you could get the news is through print or through TV. And that was completely under state control. So while the rest of us were sitting here and watching cat videos and shopping online, and we're using the internet for that, for them, this was a window into a universe that they never knew existed. For people living there, it was a massive, massive transformative change, and we have that now to engage with them and to talk to them, and we're seeing these stories like Rahaf Al-Qunun, that Samar Badawi, and all the women who are fighting for the right of women to drive. I mean, there's so much happening in places like Saudi Arabia, the place where I grew up, that was unimaginable just a couple of decades ago. So yes, engagement, conversational pressure, but forcing, no, then you're just doing exactly what they're doing, and you don't want to sit on your ass and do nothing either.
I mean, Mimsy's dad is in the live chat.
He is?
Yes.
Okay, well, I was just going to send him an invitation to come on the show, so hopefully he will at some point. Hi Hassan, how are you? And Harris is there too.
Harris,
if you're in the live chat, can you tell us what's going on with if you got an update from the Mufti, and let us know if we're having that debate?
But yeah, we should have Hassan. I've been friends with Hassan Redmond for a very long time on Facebook, and I've been following a lot of his posts, and I've seen him on some YouTube videos, and I never knew that he is Mimsy's father. That's so, I mean.
Yeah, I found all that out when we talked to Vidu. It was actually really wild. But there's a little, someone is saying here, who is it? Oh, it's actually Harris who's saying that Armin is the sexiest ex-Muslim. But yeah, so there you go, Armin.
Thanks.
You've won the award here. Okay.
Well, I'm going to see him soon in Australia, so we'll plan something.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good. Sounds like a plan. All right, so the apostle is a male. I'm trying to get to another
question. Oh, yeah, I met Hassan in London, and I think in the secular conference. Is that right, Hassan? Sorry, I don't remember. I'm so bad at this.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so... All right,
go to the next question.
Okay. All right, let's see. The next question. A lot of comments here for the podcast. All right, so... one question, just curious, how close is Urdu to Persian, or is it incomprehensible?
Both. It's just like when somebody from Pakistan is speaking, you don't understand anything, and all of a sudden, hey, what did you just say? Yeah. I know that word, what was that? Oh, yeah, that's the same word we use. So, like, yeah. It's basically just like in the middle of like a whole paragraph, you might notice like one or two words. So,
yeah, I've noticed as with Urdu, I've noticed that when I hear people speaking Farsi or Persian and I hear people speaking Arabic, it's sort of similar. Mm-hmm. I think that Persian is as different from Urdu as Arabic is different from Urdu, because you can pick up a few words here and there, but it depends on familiarity. Urdu is almost identical to Hindi. Anybody who speaks Urdu,
but you just write it with Arabic fonts. That's all the only thing.
Yeah, no. There are word different. There are many different words. I mean, if you hear someone speak like pure Hindi and pure Urdu, they're going to sound very different. But any Urdu speaker will be able to understand most Hindi and any Hindi. So, yeah. But I mean, we're like as far as it's used conversationally on a daily level, right? So it's pretty easy. But
okay,
but generally, a Persian Urdu. There's a lot of poets who wrote in both. Actually, a lot of Pakistani poets.
I just want to clarify, Harris saying you don't remember Hassan. I do remember Hassan. I just don't remember specifically. Like, I'm just very bad at time and location.
We're both huge fans of Hassan.
Yeah, we are very.
We're huge fans of Hassan.
Like, so. Because Harris is saying he's like ex-Muslim royalty. So don't.
yeah, I know. So, I know. Okay. So, yeah. So there you go. That's that. Then,
by the way, Pashto is closer. Anyway, let's go to the next question.
Yeah, I guess my short story wasn't very short.
Yeah. Oh my god, you're still all the way up there? Read them faster.
Listen, I'm going through the questions.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find, so I'm trying to be judicious with the questions so we get some variety and we cover things that we haven't covered before. Zane is asking, what is your opinion on the opioid crisis?
Don't know enough to say. I just know.
I know that there is one. I'm not going to go into too much. I mean, yeah. There's the issue of the heroin abuse. Now, opioids are basically, they're prescribed, so people...
The only way that this could get relevant to us is that if you somehow connected to the shit that's happening in Afghanistan.
I'll also tell you another way it's relevant to us. Huh. Another way it's relevant to us. Nowadays, what do people do when they're stressed? When they're upset, they're stressed, what do? They pop a Xanax, right? Right. Or if they have a lot of pain, if they're in pain, they'll take an opioid, OxyContin or whatever. They do that. They'll take Xanax. They'll take antidepressants. They'll take Valiums to relax. You know what people used to do when these drugs weren't available? What did they do when they were really stressed and depressed? And
pray.
Yes.
Oh.
So when
really? Oh wow, I got the right.
Of course they did. So they didn't have the alternative. Like people, when they get so desperate, they have to pop a Xanax. You know, they used to pray before. So that may have something.
Are you trying to say prayer is like heroin? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, I am trying to say. And it does activate. I mean, religious fervor has been shown it activates the same parts of the brain that that this does. When Karl Marx, who said, who I know is very, very
is controversial it, but,
about it.
But
when he said religion
that was a stretch, though. Masses, you're reaching, though. You're reaching. So I was... No. You made it okay, but
I'm trying to make it relevant to the podcast.
But I think my way was better. Do you think that solving the Afghanistan, like a lot of people think, like, oh, Afghanistan, who cares? Like nobody talks about it anymore, the war in Afghanistan. But do you think that solving the situation, like maybe the opiate crisis, have anything to do with the fact that Afghanistan is still a cassette show and they need a lot of people there need the money from heroin, and this is flooding the global market with that. Maybe we could make people start paying attention to Afghanistan again by selling it as a solution to the opiate crisis. I don't know, but only if it's true, though. I don't know.
Yeah. Enough about that. I think that's way too multifactorial. But
okay. Yeah.
So Shahad is asking, hey, tell us a story of your, he said strangles as an ex-Muslim. I think he means struggles. So tell us a story of your struggles as an ex-Muslim. I would answer this very quickly and tell you to go back and hear the very first episode of secular jihadists ever. From 2017. So go over there and just a very episode one, and you'll hear the stories of pretty much all of us.
Right.
Armin and I, especially at that time, Faisal and Yasmin were also on this. So you're going to hear their stories as well. And they're all really compelling. And that's still one of our most popular episodes to this day.
Right.
And it's actually available to view for public, for everybody is able to watch the video version of that.
Yeah.
So you can check it out. Okay. Let's move on.
Oh, hey, Mars is here.
Yeah, and so Chi is asking, Chi Kat Young, how do you see the Ahmadiyya Muslim? Do you think that their interpretation and understanding of Islam is far deviated from traditional Islam?
Yes.
Hmm?
Yes.
Far deviated?
Yes. I mean, as far as you can get. Well, how far can you get?
Yeah, it's, well... yeah, so here's the thing. Let me just explain this for people. So Ahmadiyya Islam is basically, it's a creation from India, right? So there's a guy named Mirza Ghulam Ahmed, right?
Hmm.
Yeah, MGA they call him. So he came out and he said a couple of things. He said he was sort of the metaphorical manifestation of Jesus' spirit. He said that he was a prophet, you know, he was sent by God. Yeah. So he said that he was basically a prophet and a Messiah. You know, some people think he was more of a Messiah than a prophet. Other people think he was a more of a prophet than a Messiah. But in any case, he wasn't a new prophet with a new scripture. He still retained the scripture of the Quran, which he said was the last revelation ever. But he said that he was a prophet that was sent after Muhammad to carry out that message. And the Ahmadiyya community is very, very fast growing. They go out, they proselytize a lot. He drastically reinterpreted the scripture to a form that it almost is unrecognizable, in the sense that it took out all the jihad elements, reinterpreted all the war verses as out of context.
They have their own shitty, like really crazy views as well. Like don't
they do? Yeah,
they're like really.
Yeah, they do. I'm not justifying. I'm talking about some of the things that makes them different is they're not as they don't have as much antipathy towards the non-Muslims and the kafirs and the jihad and killing people and holy war and all that.
Okay, I'm not gonna. Yeah. We could have an entire episode on their. They do have their own versions of intolerance and bigotry.
Intolerance, but they don't carry it out through violence. They do it through
proselytization. There's not enough of them. I mean, you don't know. Like, okay.
But in any case, yeah, they are...
They have a lot of bigoted views that if they were in power, it could be used to use those doctrines to shit on other people.
That's a good point. So they are a minority, and usually minorities, like, you know, they try to conform to some extent. So it has been modified in a lot of ways. But the problem is that the Ahmadiyya are persecuted very, very, very badly.
Yes.
So they're routinely killed. They're considered, because they believe in a prophet after Muhammad, who was supposed to be the seal of the prophets. They are considered to be apostates. They're considered to be heretics, blasphemers, just the worst of the worst. And they're killed very routinely in Pakistan. In Pakistani law, you can't get a passport, you can't get an ID card unless you sign at the end of every standard ID card application and passport application. There's a statement that says that I openly state that, you know, Mirza Ghulam Ahmed was an imposter and he wasn't a prophet. So
that's how sensitive about that. It. Like, think about it. Think about being like in the United States or Canada, and every application that you have to fill, or every time you want to get a passport or everything, you have to testify that this person was an imposter before you actually can.
You can't do it.
So like that's, but think about the levels of fear that Pakistan has over this community. How much?
And if you don't want to sign that, then you can't say that you're Muslim on the ID card. And that's the thing. In Pakistani passports, it says your religion. In Pakistani ID cards, it says your religion. So
Ali's wife.
Yeah. And if you change your religion, and if you have apostatized from your religion, then you're not even allowed to change it. So.
But the The main thing that most Muslims hate about Ahmadi Muslims is the idea of having a prophet after Muhammad, which is one of the most fundamental parts of mainstream Islam, which is very mainstream Islam, okay? And which is the idea of Khatamatul Nabi. Is that how you say it? Khatamatul Nabi? That's how they said to us.
That's Khatma, the seal of the prophet, last prophet.
God had shitload of prophets, I think 114 or 314, I forgot. But throughout history, and five of them were the most important ones.
I thought it was 124,000 or something.
I forgot. I don't know. Shitload of prophets. God sends shitload of prophets throughout history. Five of them are the most important ones. I think Adam is not one of the most important ones. The five, Noah, Moses, Jesus. Who is the fourth one? Maybe Adam. And then Muhammad. I forgot my Islamic teaching classes. But
yeah,
Adam was also the first prophet. But Muhammad was, like, anybody in the live chat telling me who the fourth one was? Oh, yeah. Well, 124,000.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, okay.
That's the right number.
I forgot my...
Not all of them are named. Most of them are not mentioned by name. So let's not start naming all of them. Otherwise, we'll get... basically, a lot of the same ones.
No, but Muhammad is the last one. He's basically... it's kind of like God spoon-fed his religion. All of them were Muslim, by the way, if you didn't know, starting from Adam, okay?
If you didn't know.
But, just in case. But it's kind of like God, we're like a little baby, right? God can't just like give us like the food just right away, right? First, he has to like give us milk, and then he chews the food for us and gives it to us. And then when it comes to Muhammad, now we can start eating the real meal. And that's the last one. It doesn't get any better than that. So if you say that you're a Muhammad, a prophet after Muhammad, then that's really fucked up. That's like goes against everything that Islam teaches. So that's why they're very, and if you say that while pretending to be a Muslim, this is very sensitive to Muslims because they hate that more than people that say shit while not being Muslim, right? So saying this is Islam and them saying, you know, say, and you providing a different version of Islam is a much bigger shit that people have to deal with than somebody saying like, hey, I'm a Christian. This is Christianity. I don't agree with Islam. They disagree with you. I mean, you get, not to be fair, Christians get a lot of shit as well, but that's more tolerated. Or even if you say you're an atheist, if you were not an ex-Muslim, but if you're just an atheist, like most of the time, you're like, okay, whatever. Not everywhere, obviously, like in Egypt is illegal. But what I'm saying is that if you say I'm a Muslim and this is Islam and it's a different version of Islam, that's the worst thing you could possibly do, right? So, and this is why this is the exact reason why Islamic reform is never going to go anywhere. But this is the reason why they hate it, because it's worse than even for Sunnis, especially. This is worse than Shia Islams, because they have a lot of disagreements with Shias and they hate them more than Jews, Christians, and atheists, because they're also Muslim, but they have a different version of Islam. But at least the main fundamentals of Islam, they agree with them, right? Like Muhammad was the last prophet, Quran was the direct word of God, Hajj, all of that. Okay. You are still, they still takfir them, but not the same as Ahmadis, which are getting some of the main fundamentals. They're changing that. That's a very sensitive thing to touch. I do get some, I'm getting some comments on Facebook as well. I could read that.
Yeah, read out one.
Is atheist Muslim banned in Pakistan?
Oh, I don't know.
And also Atheist Republic. Atheist Republic Twitter is banned in Pakistan, but our Facebook is one of our greatest fan base is from Pakistan. But Twitter,
there have been some disturbing issues with Twitter banning certain tweets, and they're getting letters saying that your tweet cannot be seen in Pakistan. So they're banned from Pakistan. I know that that kind of thing has happened with a few people.
Yeah. But that's yeah. but it's fine. Every time if, we reach, we all find they know. Again, we know how to reach them. But go on.
Don't give up on the Pakistanis. They know how to use all kinds of different proxies. I don't even know the terminology, but they know how to get stuff
because of porn. Again, we touched on this before, right? Did because I tell you? Yeah, but again, this is a great thing about Islamic Islamic countries is that they ban porn, and the good thing about that is that no government can go between teenage boys and their porn. Okay, when you ban that, they will find a way
to access it,
to get to those, to get that porn. And this is at a very young age.
So they find a way to access everything. That's been
everything,
banned, including.
Exactly. So I think a lot of these Islamic countries have basically, shoot themselves in the foot by banning porn, because you are making sure that all the kids learn the ways to go through around your filters. The same tools that they use to get to their porn is going to be there eventually when they grow up and start getting interested in activism. They're going to use the same skill set to get to their other kind of material that they need to get to.
Okay. You were going to have a Facebook question.
No, that's it.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah.
Okay, so Hazem is saying, what do you think the role of artists and writers should be to the ex-Muslim Muslim Enlightenment movement? And so we've touched on this before. I just want to say that I think that there are many things that you can write in op-eds and process cerebrally, and I've said this before, but when you put them in a story, even a fictional story, it can take on a power that is much, much more influential. So, you know, you may have data and stats that lean a certain way, and then you come up with one fictional anecdotal story, and that can change the stats. And the example I always give is that, you know, I used to read all this stuff that processes cerebrally about gay rights, gay people have rights, should they be allowed to marry? When I was growing up, at that time, it was a genuine controversy in the 80s. And then when I saw Philadelphia, the movie with Tom Hanks, where he played a gay man who'd lost his job, or a man who had HIV and was gay and he'd lost his job. That story really impacted me. It totally changed the way that I thought. And religion also uses this. If you look at art, the power of art and the power of just any kind of artistic expression, you know, you've got Christianity's got, all those paintings in the Vatican. They've got art, they've got music, hymns. Music is in pretty much everything. And in Shia Islam, you've got the music of Muharram. The Adhan is music. You've got calligraphy in Islam. You've got poetry in the Quran. So there is, these are very, very powerful ways. They're good for memory too. I mean, you read a book, a nice, you know, if you read The God Delusion, you're not going to be able to retain a full chapter and remember it. But if you hear a song that you last heard in high school, you may be able to remember half the lyrics. So this art and art is actually very, very powerful. And that's why I say if there are any ex-Muslim artists and writers and comedians and musicians and actors and filmmakers, go out there and do your thing and watch Ideas Unboxed. Reach out to them. Maybe they'll give you a platform. I think that you could really do that.
Ali, I want to do some documentaries with you one day on Ideas Unboxed. By the way, thank you so much for giving me so much shout out for Ideas Unboxed.
I'm a big so I absolutely love it. It's actually been one of my favorite things that I've seen. I've never seen anything that good within this movement.
So thank you.
It's amazing. And of course, it had to come from you.
Thank you.
Of course, as always. So, all right, so let's see, unless you have something. Okay, there you go. Sorry, guys, this I have to weed through the comments to get to the questions. So, yeah. Someone had asked, okay, there you go. Have ex-Muslims considered learning about the one true messenger of salvation, the story of Xenu and the Galactic Congress? Okay. So is he talking about Scientology?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting. We had a show. Didn't we have it? We had an episode on the father of the head of Church of Scientology. Do you want to mention?
Yeah. That? Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
So we had an episode with Ron Miscavige.
Right.
Ron Miscavige is the father of the current head of Scientology, David Miscavige, the guy who is very good friends with Tom Cruise and so on. Ron had actually gotten his whole family into the Scientology church. Yeah. And then he escaped it while they got really, really into it.
Yeah, go check that out. Yeah.
He has a book out too, so you should also
go check that episode. That was very, I mean, the experience that
it's pretty intense.
Yeah, it's very intense. Like he was like kidnapped and under house arrest by the church. It was crazy. Like he could have gotten killed. And like the experience that he had trying to run away from the Church of Scientology was very similar to a lot of experience of ex-Muslims. That was really crazy episode. Go check it out. What should people search for to find that? Secular jihadist.
Secular jihadist Ron Miscavige. Jihadist Scientology.
Yes.
Whatever. You'll find it. So it's very, we're luckily very easy to find.
Yeah.
So, next question. Hassan Ridwan is saying, come back to Islam, guys. It's such a... But why don't you, Hassan, you got to come on our podcast and then let's have a conversation about it.
Actually, I was thinking if we can grow the ex-Muslim community by getting a lot of atheists that were never Muslim to just quickly convert to Islam for like 5 minutes and then leave. And then we will exponentially grow the ex-Muslim movement. No? Does that work?
Armin, that's brilliant. I know. We'll do that on April Fool's Day. What do you think of Jadood 37 is saying, what do you think of Pastafarianism? And I know this may have been intended as a frivolous question, but I think it's amazing. When I first read about Pastafarianism and the Flying Spaghetti Monster and saw that whole Wikipedia page about it, I was like, this is one of the best refutations about of religion and faith that I have ever seen. Like, especially when you say, and the most common argument is, you can't prove that there is no God, or you can't disprove the existence of God. You know, that it's just the perfect thing to throw. It was like, well, you can't disprove the existence of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Right? There's so many people who believe in him. There was this, I think when it was at its peak, there was a guy with a pasta strainer on his head who wanted to get his driving license photo taken.
It's official. It's now an official religion in some countries. And by the way, I'm actually an ordained minister. I was looking for my certificate.
Where is it, Armin?
It's in the other room. Should I get it? No.
Armin is an ordained minister at the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Yes.
I want to be one too. How do I become one?
It's very easy. Just go on their website.
It can't be. No. It can't be easy. I have to study something. There has to be some training. Can't be that easy.
It's easy, but don't tell anybody how easy that was. It sounds a lot more special if you don't tell.
Yeah. I
know. Oh, Theo Mackey just said the Shahadat. And he also apostate. Oh, Theo Mackey is an ex-Muslim now. He just said the Shahadat and then he apostatized. So, welcome, Theo Mackey. I wonder
all you have to do, unlike.
I wonder if we're going to get ex Muslims of North America into a lot of shit because now a lot of people can join, even though they were Muslim for 5 minutes. But now their people are going to be like, hey, can I join now? Because I was a Muslim, I'm an ex Muslim. Because guys, if you were a 5 minute Muslim, please don't join ex Muslims of North America because it takes a lot of time and energy for them to go through the screening process and they might not have the resources to deal with all of you. So go ahead.
Yes, come to you. So, frustrated atheist, is there any way I could get one of y'all to help for a video? I'm usually very open to this kind of stuff. So, yeah, send us an email, secularjihadist@gmail.com. Send us an email.
Wait, what was this? Email about what?
He's saying there's somebody who's trying to make a video and they want to see if...
Yeah, Jeremy? Was that Jeremy?
No, it was Frustrated Atheist.
No, okay, but there was also a message from Jeremy that you haven't read.
No, what is it? Can you read it if I haven't?
Where is it? He said he wants to make a trailer.
There's a lot of stuff here. So
he wants to make a trailer for Secular Jihadist.
Yeah, let's do it.
And I don't know if you know who he is, Jeremy LeVay. Am I saying it right? LeVay. He's the guy behind editing and videoing, and him and his team, a lot of the people, of Ideas Unboxed.
Oh.
Yes, and he's in the live chat. So
Jeremy, I've just been complimenting you like crazy. and just talking about how amazing ideas on
boxes. Mentioned that he's in the live chat while you're complimenting him. Sorry, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, go on.
So, Razib, our friend Razib, great Razib Khan, is asking.
Wait, Chris is saying I have to marry Stacy. Who's why? What does that happen? I don't know what's happening.
I mean, I think that you have to marry Stacy.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, Christy, explain yourself. But go on, Ellie.
So Razib is saying, is there a religious person as punctilious about the points, about points of fact about religion as Armin? What? Armin, are you punctilious?
I don't know.
Okay, now we're just having fun now because we have a few minutes left. But anyway, yeah.
Wait, can you explain that question?
Huh?
Can you explain the question?
Punctilious. Are you punctilious about the points of religion? Do you want to know the definition of the word punctilious?
Yes, please.
Punctilious, according to Google, is showing great attention to detail or correct behavior. Razib Khan uses a lot of big words.
Huh, why? But I try to be the answer. That's the answer to that question. Genetically modified skeptic is in the live chat. Yay! When is that episode is going to be public?
It's waiting for your review, Armin. It's already up.
Oh, shit. Max, okay.
Put it in. It's, okay, just, okay. It's ready for review.
Okay. Ready review.
It's right there. It's
gonna
almost
publish,
there.
Going to publish it tomorrow.
And that's an awesome episode.
That was a great episode.
Amazing. The next one, yeah, so pretty much like if you're listening to this live, the next episode that's going to be out is with Genetically Modified Skeptic. And it's like a kick-ass episode. It was so good.
And really he's also saying he's one of the smartest YouTubers. His channel is growing, but it's still very underrated. Go check out Genetically Modified Skeptic. It's a very good channel. He's saying the ex-Muslim community is so kick-ass now that I kind of want to join Islam and apostate so I can join the club. I won't give XMNA a hard time though.
Actually, forget about that. Don't do it. Don't do the XMNA. Just come on our show and accept Islam, and we'll help you through the Shahada and all that stuff, and just do the whole thing live on our show.
Genetically modified skeptic just recently, I was going to say genetically modified food, skeptic recently had a fundraiser for XMNA, I think.
And he got his goal. He got his full goal. Yeah, I didn't mention that. He reached his full goal and it was pretty amazing.
Good.
So
yeah.
He did that. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for doing that.
Yeah, that's you're
fantastic.
Awesome.
Fantastic. So another, Harris is asking, why do you think no woman has ever thought about inventing a religion, even in the contemporary world?
They have, haven't they?
They have. Yeah, loads of them. They just didn't do it. The Abrahamic religions aren't.
No, not right? The Abrahamic religions, but I think they have.
Pagan, the Wicca. Like, but the thing is that when women invented religions, they were called witches, and then they were burned at the stake, and you know, all of that. So they have a history of it. Armin's got some big, for those who are listening to this and not watching it, Armin has this big book, say opening up, and the book is opening up into little books. it's really weird. I don't know what's going on.
No, this is my book of all religions.
Yeah. So, okay, you look that up. Name a couple of religions that were invented by women. And while you look that up, I'll look up the next question because we have about, 15 minutes left. So
okay.
No, let's get a few more questions in.
Yeah, you.
Okay.
Wait. The religion of Wicca. Do you know what the name of the religion? What's the meaning of the name of the religion is? According to this, by the way, I don't know. It's
I don't know. You have the book.
Wise woman.
Wise woman, yeah, the Wicca, wise woman.
Wasn't that one founded by a woman then?
Of course it was. Yeah. The Wicca thing, like there's the Wicca, there still are groups that do that.
I don't know. Tell us, somebody that knows more about Wicca, tell us if it was founded by a woman or not, but go on.
Okay, so Theo's saying, isn't it true that Abrahamic religions gradually became easier to join and went from learning Torah, getting circumcised, going to law school, to saying a two-line phrase? That's true.
Say that again.
It's the evolution of laziness. The Abrahamic religions, he's pointing out how they gradually became easier to join. Because first what you had to do was you had to learn the Torah, study it. You had to make sure your mother was a Jew or something. And then it moved on to, and you had to be circumcised. Mm. Then later on, it became like, you know, going to law school, to saying, of the, you know, like with Christianity. And then now it's just about saying a two-line phrase. Well, Christianity became pretty easy, too.
Except that Scientology, you have to pay $200, apparently.
You have to, you have a membership fee.
Genetically Modified Skeptic is saying, you heard it here first. GMS will join Islam in the second part of his guest appearance on Secular Jihadist.
We're doing it. We're absolutely doing it.
Yes, that's amazing.
We're going to schedule. I'll reach out to you, Drew, and we'll set that up. It's going to be a blast. Let's seriously do that. Let's go through the whole motions. Let's make him a Muslim.
There's no motions. You just have to say the Shahada.
Oh, he's going to have to take a shower, though.
Ghusl?
He's going to have to do ghusl, yeah.
Okay. You say ghusl, we say ghusl. Okay, go on.
Ghusl, it's, I don't know. So, okay, whatever. Kabbalah. Was Kabbalah made by women? Kabbalah is part of Judaism, so it doesn't
count.
Nice. Even though it's like a corruption of Judaism, but still. It's still part of Judaism. Okay, man. I think, do you have any more questions on Facebook and stuff?
Oh, yeah, let me check.
There's a lot of...
Yeah, let me check.
I think I lost my place.
No, it's... Somebody's, Jason is saying atheism's the way to go. I agree. Yeah. But yeah, that's about it, I think.
So there's more comments. Anyway.
I need a shower before saying shahadat. No, you need to do ghusl for a whole bunch of things. I didn't know you need to do ghusl after shahadat. You need to do ghusl after sex, after touching a dead body, after menstruation, apparently.
No, but it's part of becoming Muslim is when you say the Shahada. I don't know if it's before.
We had stories of this.
But to start your life as a Muslim, you have to do the ghusl.
No, those are part of the practices. It's not, you're technically a Muslim right after the Shahada. You know, like I remember when we were in school, we were told a story that was supposed to make us all cry about this mom that died, and right before she died, she said the Shahadat and then died right away and now she's in heaven. Like the whole story is longer than that, obviously. But it's supposed to, like, this is the most, the part, the highlight, the ending of it, that she died and in her son's arms and she became a Muslim. But she just said the Shahadat. So she didn't do ghusl. Sorry. Anyways.
Well, I mean, she's dying and you can't.
Yeah, but technically, once you say the Shahadat, and here's the tricky, by the way, just to be fair to, I know a lot of.
Can you explain what the Shahada is so that people.
Ashhadu anna la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadur Rasulullah. And I know, yes, that's Persian accent. Oh, it's not right. Arabic.
No, that's, you're wrong. It's not Ashhadu anna. It's la ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah. It's not Ashhadu anna. Is I witnessed that. That's in the Adhan. Armin.
La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah. But you have to testify that. So you have to say Ashhadu anna.
No, you don't have to say it. You're testifying when you're saying it.
We were told that you have to say it. Ashhadu anna la ilaha. You have to say that I testify. I don't know. Well, la ilaha.
You gotta get this right, because if we can't.
Fine. As long as you mean it, as long as you mean that la ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. But the problem is to be. I know a lot, we were joking around about this. The problem is that you actually have to mean it. You actually have to mean it that you believe it, and that's almost impossible. I mean, it is impossible. It's not almost impossible if you don't mean it. So you can't pretend become. You actually have to believe what you're saying. So
yeah,
it's a little bit difficult. Sorry.
Anyway, guys, programming notes really quick. Okay, so I already mentioned that Mimsy Vids is going to be on the show on Sunday. Okay, so you can see that it's going to be around. I think it's at noon EST, but it's around that time. So just keep a watch out on the Secular Jihadist Facebook page and on our Twitter account, and we'll let you know when that's happening. Second thing is Graham Wood. Graham Wood, the author of The Way of the Strangers, the book on ISIS, and the author of, I think, one of the most widely read Atlantic articles in history, What ISIS Really Wants, the famous cover story from a couple of years ago, which was brilliant. And you can check that out. So he's the author of that, too.
No, you have to say Ashhadu anna. I was right.
I actually looked up that you don't.
Hmm.
So
that's how I was told in school, but I think you have to. Hey, look, if you look at the Shahadat, if you look up Shahadat and if you look at the full phrase, it has Ashhadu in there. But I guess you just have to mean the La ilaha illallah and the Muhammad Rasulullah part. As long as you're saying that as if you mean it, then I think that counts as the Shahadat. Just saying the Ashhadu anna part is also you saying that I am testifying this, right? So,
yeah.
But if you look at the full phrase, it has Ashhadu anna in both of them.
I am going to look that up later when it's not so late at night, and I'll get back to you, and we'll see.
Okay.
So, yeah, again, so I was saying Graham is going to be on, he rescheduled, so he's actually going to be on next Thursday. So today is, what's the date today? Today is the 10th, right? So he's going to be on the 17th. So on the 17th, he's going to be on at around 9:30 p.m. And we're going to be on here with Graham Wood. And Graham, again, what ISIS really wants, he wrote that Atlantic cover story. He wrote the Way of the Strangers about ISIS, which is a fantastic book. And he also went to high school with Richard Spencer. So that's going to be kind of fun.
Hey, should we have Richard Spencer on the show?
I would love to have reached out to him many times, but he's not.
Wait,
he isn't responding.
Okay, he said that we're going to be accused of so much shit when we have him on the show.
Hey, Razib, if you're on the thing, did you know Richard Spencer? I know you wrote, there was something going on.
I heard him recently say
Razib,
that,
right?
I recently heard
by
him
the way,
say,
Razib is not a white supremacist. I just want to say that first.
Yeah, we're going to get in so much shit when we have him on. People are going to accuse us of so much. But he said, I saw him recently say that he will go on anyone's show that is ready, willing to have a respectful discussion with him. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think we have proven, we talked to people that want to kill us.
Very respectful.
Yeah. We've had people on the show that say that said that they would be okay to kill us. And we had respectful conversations with them. So given that he said that, why is it so difficult to get him on the show? Let him know.
I have done it.
Okay. But send him a link to of a show that we had with Daniel Hayraju, which on the same show that he said that under Islamic Khalifa we are worthy of being killed, and show look, we had a respectful conversation with this guy, so we have proven that we are capable of having a respectful conversation with anybody. So you're not going to be treated with insults. I mean, we're going to push back.
Yeah. There is a Bridges TV is in the live chat. Bridges TV, are you the same sort of channel, the TV channel that was on there? Or you just kind of named after them? I'd be really curious. Bridges TV was like a channel about Muslim issues that started after 9/11. And then it kind of went, it folded. I know my brother was on there a couple of times, but then it folded when the guy who founded it to dispel Muslim stereotypes, the guy who founded Bridges TV ended up getting arrested for beheading his wife.
I think I got a message from that guy. I'm trying to bust Muslim stereotypes. I'm going to respond to them today, I think.
Okay, so we're going all over the place. All right, guys.
But again, Richard, another person that I want to have on the show, which is going to get us into a shitload of trouble, is Jared Taylor.
Who's that? I don't know.
Yeah, we're gonna get demonetized and everything. Like our whole channel could go down if we have him on the show. I mean, he has his own YouTube channel, so I don't know why everywhere he's appears on a.
Who is that? I don't even know what that is.
You don't know Jared Taylor?
Is he just like a YouTube? Let's get somebody who's got some like non.
Oh yeah, no, this guy was big before YouTube was even a thing.
All right. Yeah, ask him about it. But anyway,
Bridget TV is saying where he also said great work, guys. So I want to thank him for that. I also want to thank everybody else. Theo Mackey.
Oh, Bridget. Okay. Got it. Thank
you. Hazem Hassan, was great to have Hassan here. Harris Sultan, always great to have you. And we had a celebrity today as well. Two celebrities. Genetically Modified Skeptic, and also Hassan was here. Moose Gal, always great. Beej and Christy are not two. We have two mods in the live chat today. Christy, do you know Christy and Beej? Beej, you know. Christy, I don't know if you know.
Yeah. Someone is saying, I think Moose is saying no to Spencer. A dude like that needs no attention. I disagree
very much.
I don't think it's about the attention. The problem is that with a guy like him, many of his views, he's had, so he coined the term alt-right. So you're right. Like, I wouldn't go out and find every Nazi on the street to come in. But somebody like Richard Spencer, I think it's interesting because whatever he does, I've seen some of his talks, and he's influential. I mean, the president of the U.S. has echoed some of the same views that Richard Spencer holds.
But we won't do it at the cost of losing our entire channel and everything.
Yeah, and we're not going to do it because we like him or we agree with him or anything like that. One of the things about this is getting to know how people tick. So when we get Daniel Hakikojo, when you get people that we really, really disagree with, it's that we want to know how they're thinking because, you know, it's when you know how people are thinking. Yeah,
it's actually very interesting to me because when we have Daniel Hayreju, he thinks it's okay to kill gay people, beat your wife, have sex with 9 year olds, and kill people that leave Islam. But we don't get anybody telling us that we shouldn't have had him on our
channel. In an ideal Islamic society, remember, he doesn't support that here.
Okay, but.
Just trying to be fair.
Alt-right people, so like Nazis, also might say the same thing about ideal Nazi government, right? I don't know, but what I'm saying is that when we have people with far right views, people are like, "Why are you giving these people platform?" I'm like, "Well, why didn't you upset when we had Daniel Hayreju on?" Then people say, "Well, no, because these people are gaining ground and their problems are more problematic and it's more mainstream." I'm like, are you fucking serious? Do you really not know how mainstream and how widespread Daniel Hayreju's views are? It's way more widespread and way more common than than Spencer's.
Yeah, and on the other hand, we've also had Majid Nawaz on, who's at the other side of the Muslim spectrum. So, I mean, there's Izzy saying just don't invite an alt-right person or a Nazi on every show. That, of course not. That's not what this show's about. This show's not about culture wars. We're not actually, you know, we have talked about certain guests, and then I know I have told Armin and we've mutually discussed this that we want to keep it relevant to the topic that we're on.
I want to discuss
just because everybody's talking about incels. We're not going to start, you know, doing shows about incels just because everybody's talking about Nazis. We're not, because that's not necessarily relevant to secular jihadists. If something is, our stuff is centered on Islam and Muslim issues, and
but we
if there's a connection to that.
But sometimes we get touch other stuff. I mean, we had an episode on Scientology, right? So
but religion, yeah. But the Scientology, a lot of that was about the similarities that we have. So we've had Jehovah's Witnesses, ex-Jehovah's Witnesses.
Well, we're not having him on secular jihadists, I might bring him on Atheist Republic. But Spencer.
No, Spencer, I agree with that. I think that
How is that relevant to Islam?
Because I think that it shows how it's for the same reason that we had Leon Kordovic on. I mean, Leon is the polar opposite of Richard Spencer, so no, I don't mean to make any kind of comparison there. But the same, because he was a former white nationalist, and we talked about radicalization and how people adopt certain views, and we did discuss that with him, right? And I want to kind of see that, you know, that parallel between
nationalism. The way I see it's relevant is because what we're trying to do, the secular jihadist, is the enlightenment part. Like, the name that you came up with is after we changed the show, secular jihadist for Muslim enlightenment, right? And I think what we're trying to do is promote enlightenment value. And I think a certain challenge to that is people that emphasize more on tribes based on race, based on nationality, based on culture. And the competition that we have against that is that we are promoting a certain values. Mm-hmm. And I think if we want to build a community, those values, identifying the best values, values that could be shared to everybody, regardless of their race, nation, gender, sexual identity, or sexual orientation. That is what we're promoting over people that are trying to promote a certain identity that is based on attributes that that they didn't even choose. They were just born with, right? And I think promoting ideas, enlightenment values, in an age where identity politics is having a comeback from all sides, that's how I see it would be relevant to challenging somebody like Richard.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, and we're aligned on that. I'm totally good with having it. And as I said, I've tried to ask him many times, but I just haven't gotten a response.
We're also inviting. Can I say who else you're inviting, or no? Is that a secret?
who were invited. Let's talk about people who've sort of accepted or responded.
Okay, good.
In this case, someone asked, but but yeah, there are. Right now, I'm prepared to announce that, you know, obviously Mimsy's going to be on Sunday.
If you know Richard Spencer, go. If you have any connection to him in any way, or you have any reach to people he knows, please recommend him coming in our show. We'll be very polite and civilized. And of course, we're going to challenge everything he says, but it will be very polite and civilized. So,
and tell him that Armin is Aryan.
Oh, shit. Okay. All right. Okay.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us. That was a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah,
it was really good. Happy New Year, and there's a lot of really good stuff happening, and I think I'm encouraged. I think we had a good 2018, and I think 2019 is just the momentum is it's there, the inertia is there. So I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be even better.
Yeah, and thank you to all our patrons. And If you're a former patron that wants to find other ways, we also now have on secularjudges.com. There is a PayPal option as well, if you prefer that. We will find any option that comes in that is that is as serious as Patreon. We're going to offer that as well. But thank you to all the people that stood by, because we do have a lot of expenses. So, and none of this would be possible without you. So thank you to the people that supported us in the past year, and we hope to be providing you with enough content and valuable information, enough for you to see it worthwhile to continue to support us. So thank you.
And if you can't support us on Patreon or anything else,
review us on iTunes,
do all of that. I mean, that's just as important.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Love you all.
Bye.
The secular jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends. Write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions. Or head over to secularjihadists.com and give a dollar or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air and more. Till next time. May the flying spaghetti monster be with you.